from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We don't think this is a partisan issue at all. This is not an agenda item. This is about American history and who we are and how to understand that.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Matthew Spaulding, our first guest on today's program. Dr. Spaulding is Vice President of Washington Operations and Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale in D.C. We talked at length with Dr. Spaulding about the 1776 Commission and the Commission's report. Dr. Spaulding, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Scott.
Dr. Spaulding, of course, part of the 1776 Commission, who helped put together the report, which you can find still at hillsdale.edu. We'll talk about all of that today with Dr. Spaulding. First of all, tell us about the 1776 Commission. What was the purpose?
The first thing, it was a two-year commission, but the first thing it was to do was to issue a report that would advise the president on the core principles of the American founding and how those principles have shaped American history. The purpose of all of it, which is really to looking ahead to the 250th anniversary of the Declaration coming up here quite quickly, 2026. That was the instigation of it. But it also had in mind, obviously, the various debates we're having about American history and how those affect how we ought to think about ourselves and our history.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Matthew Spaulding with us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, talking about the 1776 report. Part of this is a report on principles of the American founding, the Declaration, the Constitution. That's laid out in the beginning of this report. The report says, in two decisive respects, the United States of America is unique. What are those respects? Why are they so important?
Well, I think the way in which America really is unique, by unique, we mean in history, right? The report really points us back to just a good, honest, clear history. And in history, this country is unique because it's a particular people, a particular time and place, and they create this country at the very beginning based on a claim of truth, or the Declaration of Independence says a self-evident truth that all men are created equal. Now, that's a principle which you can take back to ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
It's really implicit in Christianity. We're equal in the eyes of God. But to actually put it, embed it, a universal principle in a particular nation, the combined of the universal and particular, really makes us an extremely unique country. And as a result, much of our history, indeed the driving force of our history, which is why I think one of the reasons why this report has drawn some of its critics,
mm-hmm.
It argues that the playing out of American history is not this deep, dark past that we ought to be ashamed of, but actually a great and noble past in which we have imperfectly and with flaws and stains, especially something like slavery, lived up to those principles over time. That's how the founders understood setting the path at the beginning. That's how Lincoln looked at it. That's how every great reform movement in American history, the abolition movement, women's suffrage, and the early civil rights movement, so Martin Luther King, that's how he looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
He looked back to the Declaration as a great promissory note and challenged us to live up to our principles as opposed to trying to erase them or shunt them aside. That's really what the report is calling for at its core.
The next section involves a rundown of what are called challenges to America's principles, and I want to follow up your comment about slavery there and that answer. The report says the foundation of our republic planted the seeds for the death of slavery in America. Part of the criticism of the report from the left and those who don't agree with it is this accusation of whitewashing and ignoring America's history. But reading the report clearly, we know that's not the case. When it comes specifically to slavery, what about that comment that the foundation planted the seeds for the death of slavery?
Well, I think that, you know, the two ways we have to understand the general point here. One is, first, we need a clear history of what actually happened and didn't happen. This report in no way whitewashes the past. Indeed, it calls for a history which is honest and accurate, which means warts and all.
Mm-hmm.
Slavery was a barbaric thing, and it existed at the beginning. Don't deny that in any way. Don't justify or try to ignore that. What we do want to do is look at what actually happened and how it played out. What's amazing is that a country which included slaveholders, remember, the time of the American founding was this great period in world history which was about to shift sentiments against slavery. The Declaration was crucial in that movement. Indeed, the moment the Declaration is established, everyone knew that this institution is going to be on its last legs. The idea that it planted the seed is precisely the point that really the movement of the American founding and the Declaration of Independence is what really began all of that. I mean, the first great worldwide conference on the abolition of the slave trade is in America in the context of the American Revolution. The movement away from slavery has to see its beginning precisely with the Declaration of Independence.
Hmm.
That's the seed. That's what Lincoln said, right? It's the principle laid down in the Declaration, which we are to live up to as best we can, whenever we can, however we can. That's what killed slavery, ultimately. And we got to understand that. We can't ignore that. That's the whitewashing of history that we find problematic here. That principle was the principle that formed us, that created us, and it's carried us forward, living up to our great heritage, and it still, I think, inspires us. It inspires many people around the world.
Dr. Matthew Spaulding with us, Vice President of Washington Operations, Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale in D.C., also member of the 1776 Commission. We talk about the 1776 report here. Also under the Challenges to America's Principles is progressivism. And I worry some will see this and think that progressivism is this, it's just a harmless political ideology of the left, that it's part of our politics today. Why is it a challenge to our very principles?
Well, so I'll make a general comment there, which is, so we list a number of things that are challenges to our principles. We've talked about slavery, but we include in that list progressivism, but also abroad, fascism and communism.
Mm-hmm.
And then today, we talk about the challenge of racism and identity politics. That's not to say that all these things are challenges in the same way or equally challenging as a practical matter. Slavery is clearly a barbaric injustice. Fascism and communism were clearly tyrannical and are responsible for killing, billions, hundreds of millions of people. Progressivism isn't that kind of a challenge, that kind of magnitude. That's not the point of the report.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the point of the report that intellectually these things have something in common, which is they deny the principle at the heart of the American regime. So, for instance, the end of the slavery section raises the question of the pro-slavery argument, arguments of, say, John C. Calhoun, most famously.
Mm-hmm.
He attacked the Declaration of Independence. He didn't doubt what the founders thought. He attacked it because it said that all men are created equal. And in its place, he invented an argument for group rights. And in his case, some groups, like certain white Southerners, were superior to other groups, blacks, regardless of what the majority said, and that gave them certain rights. In that way, there's a principle there that's the real problem. Well, the same is true with progressivism. Progressivism is really not all of one thing. It has policy parts there that are more agreeable, more problematic. But in principle, it denied the notion that there are self-evident truths, that there are permanent truths, everything's evolving, and quote-unquote progressive. And so that undermines the principles of the founding just as much. It really begins our movement toward a less democratic sense of popular rule towards more of an administrative rule.
We'll hold right there. Dr. Matthew Spaulding with us from Hillsdale College, talking about the 1776 Commission and the Commission's report. More in a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Room.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Make this year turtly awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Explore your world right from home with Turtle Bay TV.
Daintree is a jungle carpet python.
Featuring free educational and distance learning content for a virtual experience the whole family will enjoy.
Welcome to the vault.
Start streaming now at turtlebay.org.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868. 221-5868. MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We welcome our new affiliates, two new affiliates in Minnesota, KTOE, 1420 AM and 102.7 FM, and News Talk 1170 KFOW. Thank you for tuning in to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, Vice President of Washington Operations and Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale in D.C. about the 1776 Commission and their report. Dr. Spaulding, I want to talk identity politics just for a moment. We've discussed a couple of times with your colleague David Azarad from down in Hillsdale in D.C. The founding, when we think about the Constitution, the word is equality. With this new administration, the word that keeps coming up is equity. Is this equality versus equity conversation part of the identity politics world?
Oh, very much so, indeed. I think the you know, obviously there's a deeper historical discussion going on here about America's purpose and principles, and that's the main thing the report is concerned about. However, what it got caught up in, indeed why I think it had to be abolished on the first day of the new administration, is precisely because it made this powerful argument for the principle of equality as really the central organizing principle of American history, both, you know, from the founder's point of view, Lincoln and Martin Luther King. That couldn't stand. These things are seen as two options, and they wanted to pursue the equity one. So instead of all men being created equal, having equal rights, equal opportunities, equal before the law, equal in the eyes of God, we now are going to group people by various characteristics, race, ethnicity, sex, gender, and that's going to affect the policy outcomes. Well, that's a very, very, very different way of looking at things, which I think is inconsistent with our history and the principles of our founding, and precisely like why this is such an important debate. You know, we need to understand the difference between those terms so that we can think this through, because it might sound well and fine, but it's a very different thing. And we would encourage people to kind of read these things, think about it for themselves, and see what's really going on here.
This next section on the task of national renewal talks about the role of the family, teaching America, the American mind. There's a phrase earlier in the report on the restoration of American education. What does that mean to you?
Well, the reason that we need to restore American education in the sense that a good education should really be based upon accurate and honest history. What we especially worry about is when history becomes a tool, not for the pursuit of truth, which is what education really is about, right? We look at history to see what happened and what people thought, what that meant. But we worry about education becoming something that is used to kind of looking backwards, find things in history that allows one to make ideological or contemporary or partisan arguments. So when we talk about the restoration of education, what we mean is going back to the old-fashioned notion that, no, it's got to be based on accuracy and actual true history. We can have disagreements about that, mind you, but what can we start there? What we are nervous about, what we think that a lot of historians, left, right, and center, are nervous about, is precisely that we people are using history in partisan battle, and we actually want to avoid that and don't see ourselves going down that path at all. Indeed, we don't think this is a partisan issue at all, which is why this report was written for one president. And is perfectly available and intended to advise the next president, whoever that might be. This is not a agenda item. This is about American history and who we are and how to understand that.
Dr. Spalding, we've alluded to it through the conversation, this frenzy of opposition upon the release. Later, the Biden administration literally abolishing it, wiping it, erasing it from the website on day one in the first hours of the administration. President Biden himself explicitly denouncing it in front of the press. Why is this fight so important for both sides?
Well, I mean, I was initially kind of shocked by that, but I suppose in a certain sense it's somewhat of an honor
right.
that this is that important
right.
to be dealt with in the first moments of the presidency. I think it's so important because of where we are right now in the public debate about things, which is that a lot of current policy questions, a lot of questions that are themselves controversial, have a touchback to how we understand who we are and what our purpose is, which is a history. We don't mean to settle those current debates. That's not what this report is about. But we do think that one way to proceed, really the best way to proceed, is to begin with a good, solid, accurate, and honest view of history, and to talk about those things and talk, and then we talk about and deliberate about public policy. That's the way our system is set up, the way we've always done it. And that's a good way to avoid the kind of deep divisions which we fear are coming up in our country today. And really the way to avoid those divisions, and the way historically we've avoided those divisions, is to go back to the thing we have in common, the source of our unity. The unity does not come from the division. The unity comes by appealing to the things that are really above us, higher than us, that we can all come to understand. And we think that key thing, which should be the center of the American story of its history, but also civic education, is the fact that this country is based on the self-evident truth that all men are created equal. None are better or worse. None are more privileged than others. None have more rights, and others have fewer rights. That strikes us, and I think struck all the great figures and writers of American history, as the unifying idea of America.
Final question for Dr. Matthew Spalding here on the 1776 report. The report isn't going anywhere despite the efforts of the White House. Again, you can find it at hillsdale.edu. Download and read. How do you think this report might be used in the future by educators, by Americans everywhere? How can they use this to their advantage?
I think this report was intended and indeed has put down a marker in this larger conversation. I think that has gotten a lot of attention, indeed gotten more attention than it might have otherwise, precisely because the commission was abolished and the report was taken down. Having said that, I think that the report lays out very clearly and in a principled way what those things might look like, how we would go about teaching these ideas, but it really leaves a lot to be done. The report itself doesn't do, but clearly implies, about writing curriculum, but also having conversations about this. What does it mean for our politics? What does it mean for the classroom? What does it mean for our unity as a people? So there's a lot of work to be done.
Dr. Matthew Spalding, Vice President of Washington Operations, Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale in D.C., also member of the 1776 Commission, and this report from the 1776 Commission can be found at hillsdale.edu. Dr. Spalding, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Great to be with you, Scott. Thanks.
Up next, we'll talk with Dr. Glenn Arbery, President of Wyoming Catholic College, about why literature matters. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined today by Dr. Glenn Arbery, who is the president of Wyoming Catholic College. Dr. Arbery, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
And Dr. Arbery is here on campus for part of our CCA lecture series on the liberal arts and education today. His lecture is titled Why Literature Matters. It's also the title of a book he wrote a few years ago. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Dr. Arbery, tell us first a little about Wyoming Catholic College.
We're a liberal arts college in Lander, Wyoming, that combines great books with dimensions of outdoor experience that make it pretty unique in the world. We have horsemanship, we have rock climbing, backpacking, all that's part of our curriculum. So it's a pretty fascinating place.
Very nice. The CCA that you're here on campus for, the liberal arts and education today, is there a certain kind of education, a certain type of education we should be thinking about that's essential for the upkeep of our free society?
Immersion in the classics is what I think this whole conference is about. We have a great heritage, and we are in danger of losing it from people who think that it's oppressive and who know nothing about it. So the aim of this entire endeavor, it seems to me, from what I've heard so far, is to reclaim the sense of that heritage and really bring it to people in a new way.
Your lecture is titled, and your book is titled, Why Literature Matters. What's the literature that you, how do you define it there that you're talking about?
That's a good question, because it's so broadly defined these days. I don't want to limit it simply to what's taught in the academy, but I do want to say that it's poetry, it's fiction, and all of this with an eye toward a kind of great account of human things. If you lose the sense of greatness or nobility, then you've lost something that literature, as I mean it, has always tried to get at. Even with somebody like Don Quixote, you know, tilting at windmills, there's still a noble dimension to what he's doing. And I think that's, of anything, what we've lost most in the contemporary culture.
And to the question or to the statement of the book, why it matters? Why does literature matter? Why does it matter in the scope of a liberal arts education?
We need the great stories. We need the great characters. We need the encounter with language in a fresh way that literature gives, particularly through lyric poetry. We need the large framing cosmos that the great epics give us. I think there are ways that literature forms us that most people don't even recognize. Shelley, who's no conservative, said that poets were the unacknowledged legislators of mankind, and I think that's really why we need great literature.
Dr. Glenn Arbery with us, president of Wyoming Catholic College, talking about why literature matters and the liberal arts and education today. You mentioned the great books earlier, and it's a phrase that's well known to people around here at Hillsdale College as well. How would you describe what makes them great books, and why do they last?
I think the greatness of them comes from their address to the central, deepest questions that we have as human beings. They don't have a clear agenda. Well, some of them obviously want to change the way we think about what came before. But there's something that engages the whole person, the whole intellect in these works, that when you bring it to a conversation with the others that have preceded it, has a kind of high clarity to it. Great books are rarely poorly written either. Mm-hmm. So the lucidity and nobility of them is another mark of their greatness. You know, there are ideas that are permanent and that we keep coming back to.
You do some of this in your book, Why Literature Matters. But how do you evaluate more modern authors and more modern works and try to determine what's worthwhile, what will last, what should be part of this canon, or what at least we should spend time reading and discussing?
When I was a movie critic for a while, I discovered that there was a phenomenon of seeing movies that if I remembered them the next day, there was probably more to it than most. And I'm serious about that. You know, if it just immediately kind of leaves your mind because it's so much in keeping with everything else that's done, that's a pretty good sign that it's ephemeral. The ones that stay in your mind, that keep working on you, are have more to them. And whether they last past their, shelf life on a, you know, cultural work is a question. I think works that strike you as really memorable, like Toni Morrison's Beloved, which came out in the late 80s, I wonder how that's going to, how that'll hold up, you know, in 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Faulkner, others whose work really does seem to hold up, are under attack for other reasons, but I think you see if it's got some kind of appeal to the depths of the imagination that won't let you go. And I guess that's as good a test as any.
You mentioned earlier, and it's seemingly every week, we are reading these days about a school district or a college eliminating, canceling these great works, whether it be from Homer or Shakespeare or Mark Twain. And in addition to canceling, there's this celebration around it. We finally did it. We finally got rid of Homer. What is behind this?
It's I don't want to use the word idiocy too lightly, but it does sort of work because, you know, its roots are in particular circumstances, and you can't see past the present moment or where you are. And there's something to that thinks that if you have something from the past that's been passed down, that it must therefore be an institution and somehow serving the power of those who determine canons of literature and things like that, so that it's sort of your obligation to try to be liberated from it. Again, I'll talk about this a little bit in my lecture, but it's an impulse that seems to think that the individual has a kind of irreplaceable individuality of desires and so on that is suppressed or beaten down by having some great thing held up to it as a model.
What would be your best argument for people who perhaps didn't have the opportunity to read some of these great works, if they're a little older, to go back and still make that worthwhile? Why should they do that?
Well, it's illuminating to do it. If you haven't had a chance to read these works before, you'll be astonished at what you were deprived of, really. And, mm-hmm. and a lot of times curricula, even, you know, this has been happening now for decades, we'll think, well, we can leave that out. You know, we don't need that anymore. Or that's just for majors or whatever. But these are the greatest things written by human beings. And I think it's best if you read them with others,
mm-hmm.
just so you have a chance to talk them out and tease out the ideas. Listening to a lecture or two wouldn't hurt, but, you know, it's not as though they're not going to teach you on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that sometimes you need to get past a barrier or two to get into them.
Dr. Glenn Arbery, president of Wyoming Catholic College, talking about why literature matters. His lecture at our CCA here at Hillsdale College holds the title of a book by Dr. Glenn Arbery. Dr. Arbery, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Up next, we talk with Daryl Hart from Hillsdale's History Department about the history of American religion, focusing on Judaism. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For prospective students, for alumni, or friends of Hillsdale, check out hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Daryl Hart, Distinguished Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College. Dr. Hart, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be with you again.
And Dr. Hart teaching a course here at Hillsdale, History of American Religion. We've been diving into a few topics from that class. Today, what Americanization does to Judaism. How far back do we see Judaism in America?
Oh, it goes back even to the 17th century. You see a synagogue in the 1650s, I think, in New York. Maybe it was New Amsterdam. New Amsterdam at that point, still a Dutch colony. The English don't become dominant there, don't win the entire colony until the 1670s. And these were Jews who had actually come from Brazil, were kicked out of there, and then came to New Amsterdam, as I understand it. So you do see it even in the 17th, that early. And the oldest synagogue in America building is in Charleston. Goes back to the 18th century. So they're very much with us even back to the early colonies here.
We see Jewish migration to the United States increase dramatically in the 80s. What kind of an effect does that have?
Say that again, the 1880s?
Yeah.
It brings a whole set of different experiences. So originally, Jews had come from either the Sephardim had come from the Iberian Peninsula, the Spanish, Portuguese world, and then were kicked out in 1492. And then later in the 18th century, you get the Ashkenazi coming from German-speaking areas. The late 19th century, 1880s and beyond, bring Jews and others from Eastern Europe, Russia, and Southern Europe. And there you see a much more diverse group in a way, people who are secular entirely, maybe Marxist, communist leaning in ways, not observing at all. But then you also have people coming from shettles, from very old style, old world sorts of settings. So you have a real free for all, as it were, in Jewish life. And the previous Jewish groups, particularly the German from German background, Yiddish speaking, had established a number of institutions in the middle of the 19th century, and they're trying to figure out how to absorb these Jews, new Jews, into the Jewish community. But one of the things that's very striking about, for me anyway, the difference between Judaism and Christianity is that most of the Christian groups coming to North America have come out of a state church sort of tradition where you can expect the state support or you're against the state in some way. For Jews, they never had that except going all the way back to Palestine, perhaps. So they're having to, they've been sort of without a political center for a long time. In some ways, it makes it easier for them to adjust, but on the other hand, as well, seeing the kind of diversity that you have in America and the kind of freedom that they have, which they didn't have in Europe, presents a whole another set of conundrums for them. And one of the striking aspects of Jewish life in America, and I recommend to your listeners the Pew Forum, which is a polling space on the internet. They do great work, but they have a series of interviews with Israeli and American Jews that I use in class quite a bit, and it's striking how different American Judaism is from Israeli Judaism, that the categories of American Judaism are foreign to Israeli Jews, because in some ways it's not as if they're making it up, but they're appropriating parts of their tradition in a new setting and making adjustments and adaptations along the way. All religious groups do that, but for Jews, it almost seems more poignant in a way.
Now, Reform Judaism begins in Germany and then spreads. Is that part of what you're talking about there?
Right. Well, I mean, that's as I understand it, and I'm not a great scholar on Judaism, although I'm fascinated by it, particularly Jewish American comedians. I do show, when I teach Jewish American life, I do show a documentary called When Jews Were Funny, which is one way to get young people today to see comics who used to, actually some of them performed on vaudeville and the Catskills and the like. But yes, I mean, so after the Enlightenment and the possibilities for Jewish life in Europe, you can either sort of hold on to what you knew in the medieval period, and there were all sorts of ways of carrying on Jewish worship, prayers daily, etc. You could just assimilate and become a Christian, or you could maybe try to go somewhere in between, which is what Reform tries to do, a modern kind of Judaism. And that actually comes first of all as a kind of institutional embodiment. In America, in some ways, you could argue the most liberal of the main groups is the most historic group. It's not what you'd expect. You sort of expect it to be the Orthodox first and then the people who liberalize. But in this case, it's the Reform who are more liberal, not as liberal as the Reconstructionists. But and then it's the Orthodox and conservatives who sort of react to that.
Dr. Daryl Hart with us talking about history of American religion, Judaism, in this particular segment. We see today Judaism in pockets. You know, New York City's concentration of Jews. Did it become that way for a particular reason, where it ended up being in Florida, California, New York, where we see Judaism be most prevalent?
Part of it seems the way that the story is told, especially by people who are not Jewish, and it's easy in certain big urban environments to emphasize those groups. And when you think about Jewish contributions to media entertainment, it's also easier in some ways to look at those places where Jews had settled. But some of the Jewish friends and acquaintances that I have, people in the academy or writers, have come out of, say, Montreal and then moved to Chicago, or a fellow I know teaches at Harvard came from Akron, Ohio. I mean, and sometimes I do assign books on either suburban Jewish life or even small Midwestern town Jewish life. So Jews are all over the place, surprisingly, but then there are these bigger concentrations in certain places. And my impression is that Jews are remarkable in adapting to all sorts of environments. And it's not simply that they're doing this for economic reasons, but that's also a big incentive to find out a place where you can actually make a living.
We talked a little about this earlier, but I mean, what would you say are the biggest effects that America has had on Judaism in this country?
I guess it has given an opportunity for Jews to create ways of being Jewish, like Reformed, Orthodox, and Conservative. That again, you might not see any historical precedent for them directly. And I don't want to make it seem, again, as if they're creating it out of nothing. They're not. But they are adapting it in remarkably creative ways. And when you think that Jews in Israel don't necessarily recognize it, they can see a lot of similarities. I don't want to say that it's entirely different, but still, that for me is quite striking. And then you throw on top of this the Hasidic element. My wife and I recently watched the Netflix series Unorthodox, which is highly, highly recommended, about a woman who grows up in that community and then escapes and goes to Germany. And that's another lens into an aspect of Jewish experience where they really are trying to hold on to what might even be ancient Judaism in a way in Brooklyn of all places. It's probably one of the most fascinating aspects of religious life in America.
Dr. Daryl Hart, Distinguished Associate Professor of History here at Hillsdale College, teaching a course on the history of American religion. Dr. Hart, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Matt Spaulding from Hillsdale in D.C. talking about the 1776 Commission and their report. Glenn Arbery from Wyoming Catholic College on why literature matters. And Daryl Hart from Hillsdale's History Department on the history of American religion, specifically Judaism. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or find us on Facebook. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Tune in to North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill, featuring music, art, health, wellness, shopping, and more.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993 and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans,
and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
The Backbone Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. The Backbone Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Backbone Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Tune in to North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill, featuring music, art, health, wellness, shopping, and more.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Tune in to North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill,
featuring music, art, health, wellness, shopping, and more.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.